reconvene the hearing. Now we're scheduled to hear from Twin Farm Limited. Twin Farm here? Yep, good morning. So welcome. We've read the original submission and thank you very much for also preparing the evidence that you wrote down and handed in prior to the hearing. That's really good because we've been able to read that, so you don't need to read that out loud for it. I'm pleased to hear. But you're very welcome to speak to that and outline key points for us.
Thank you very much. Just like to start, we're running 1660 hectares in the Waimea Valley. I agree with some points that Alistair made earlier this morning, just that there needs to be more science based around it, just to keep it equal for all farmers going forward. So I believe you need to go down the more of a water testing rather than just set blanket rules. I've got a few points to list off. The winter crop, 50 hectares as a blanket rule. I know otherwise you need consent, but that consent all has a cost. I believe you should have it as a set sort of a percentage. So whether it be sort of 15 to 20% of your farm, and above that, then you require a consent. Another point I have, sloping ground. Just the ability to control weeds and improve pasture. It's in every farmer's interest to be profitable. And just the ability for young farmers going forward to, it's getting harder and harder to get into a farm now, especially you get one that's up and running on the flats. Young fellas like doing the hard yards and getting ahead. If you restrict them to not be able to improve pastures, then how are they going to get a start? And about the hill above certain slopes and that, restricting different things. I think there needs to be some restriction on it, but not just a blanket rule of saying that you can't do this. Because there are good management practices out there for it. The management zones, they need to be justified more. We have just a wee tiny strip of the old Matera going through our farm. And to be fair, that's one of the driest parts on our farm. So again, it just comes down to good practice, being able to control the quality coming off those. And a management plan, I believe you shouldn't have to do a management plan unless you're actually doing something wrong in the first place. Go down the water quality route, and if you can test water coming where it starts at your farm, whether it be through a stream or a river, a tile, a creek, whatever it be, and test it again as it leaves your property, and if you're within the realms of where you're at, then why change it? So that's probably it for me, if you want to add on.
I could just fill in all the holes you've missed,
yep,
which is nothing. I'd just like to say that we do have in the best interest of the way that we run our farm. We'd like to consider that it complies with the green image of sheep farming. We have the Waimea stream running through our property and it is not fenced off, but we only run sheep on it. And we've been complimented from people throughout the world on how good it is to fish, how good it is to see the clean streams. We are fencing off and have fenced off all of the tributaries coming down from the Hokanui's through our place where we can. And you've then immediately got a gorse and a broom and every other weed you can imagine, which then requires spraying. So technically, environmentally, that's not as good as just having the sheep eat the jolly thing when it's a wee thing. You never ever see it. It's lovely and pristine. The sheep don't like getting wet feet. They go down for a drink and come back. But we have fenced off the creeks and you know, I think the damage to the bank in those situations. The stream itself is a beautiful stream. It's an iconic photo you could take anywhere. The sheep did not damage it in any way. So, and if we were to fence it off, the damage to it in the flood would be far more it's not very good at all, the damage requirements to keep animals out of that sort of thing. So, yeah, so I know you haven't got that in your plan, but I don't want it in ideal situation. You know, 20 years' time, we end up with fencing it all off. It should be, there's no, no damage, no faults. What else did I have there? That was, I think that we need to protect against, and this is what you're doing, the one or two that abuse the situation, ruin our image, abuse the environment and everything else. But you have to be careful that you don't regulate everybody with a label them with a system that makes it so hard to comply with, that makes it very difficult. But you know, we do need to have a regulations that stops cowboys ruining the system. We're protected by a small low flood bank, and I would say that the water that we have off the Hokanui's is very good. It works as a filter for the stuff that comes off the Hokanui's. And in fairness, we're directly below an area that has been sprayed and converted, and it looks really nice. The grass on it is extremely good all the way up there. The gorse and everything is controlled properly, because it's economically worthwhile doing it. And if there was anything running off there, it would show up at our place. The stock would let you know that there was silt or damage to the pastures, and there isn't. And we have the floodgates that were shut. And it actually works as a silt trap. We're actually quite a good example of nature and good management practice working very well. So, that's sort of where we're at, and regulations, if you tie us up with regulations, they cost a minute to administer and do. So,
okay.
That's sort of the points that I have in mind.
Okay, shall we see if we have questions for you?
Yeah.
Yes. Good morning. In your submission, you referred to a 750 hectare farm. I think I heard you say it was 16.
Yes, we've just recently bought another property to add on to that.
It's doubled, more than doubled.
Yep.
So how do you, and your properties are located south, on the bottom south side of the Waimea?
Both sides of the map up there shows the Waimea is the going right through the middle of the farm.
Right.
So we've got both sides of it there, and tributaries, creeks that run into it. Some of which, a fair chunk of them, are actually fenced off as the creeks. To which ones actually, best suit practice. But the new farm that we've taken on is actually on the Hokanui, runs down in.
How do you typically manage your intensive winter graze regime?
Very weather determined. But even the best management plan will not work in extreme cases. You have to have that flexibility to be able to take them off.
We fence, as far as the river's concerned, we fence them off, and while we said that we don't have it fenced off, we certainly do if we're grazing down there in the winter, and any time of the year that's there. Best management practice is not to damage the soil, and certainly not the river edge or anything. But it's far better kept with sheep running over it, and environmentally and everything, I think it's far better. And in the event of a flood, it's far better too.
As a percentage of your property holding, what roughly would you utilise for as intensive
for winter property?
With doing grain in that, we winter on stubble as well, but I see that's not part of it. So the fodder crop, we're still only, at the moment, off the 750 hectares, we're about 30 hectares of winter crop. But then if you add in the stubble ground that we winter on as well, it goes up quite a bit.
In your submission, you were mentioning, I think, 15, 20, that you're operating under 10%.
Yep. Yep. But we're probably under what we should. I believe that if you're looking at renewing your pastures every 10 years, I think it needs to be that 15 to 20% flexibility. Just to restrict the guys that are solely, well, not restrict them, but make sure that they comply with if they're whole farm or half their farm is intensively cropped.
So how do you utilise the old Matara? You've got a narrow strip of old Matara there.
Never even knew it was there until you came out with your map.
So there's no different practice was applied to
No, that. I'd have thought the Matara strip was down the bottom of the, you know, the lower piece, but it isn't. It's up on the higher piece.
Yeah, it's a dry part of the farm. Yeah.
So it's a higher piece up on the farm. I was really quite surprised it came out with that. So it, we're lucky that it isn't an overriding thing on our place and it can be managed.
Yes. You got a whole lot of photos.
Yeah. Oh, I think there was some that we submitted.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, there you go. There's the few of the.
Yeah, that's
That's what happens when it's fenced off.
That's what creek is, fenced off.
And if you have a flood down there, it tears banks out, tears everything. But, you know, that there are places where it needs to be fenced off. And all the creeks are fenced off. I'm just saying, left alone, that's going to come.
You make a statement I don't think we disagree with, which is there are a large number of farmers who are not causing adverse effects on the quality of Southland's land and water. So the question is, which I've asked other submitters who've made that, how should those that aren't good farmers who are doing damage be identified and what should be done about them?
Like Andrew said, checking the water before and after, you have true signs that there is damage being done. We need an overriding thing because they actually affect me and New Zealand's image and everything else. If you have animals in our waterways defecating in there, that's not good. And you know all the things that do it. And I think you'd find that all of the farmers, 99% of the farmers would say that's right. So we need a rule that says that you're not to to damage our environment. So it does need a policing. It just needs to make sure that the rule isn't that encompassing that it actually incurs a huge cost to everyone else that is complying.
Okay.
That's why I think if you go down the water quality track and then you can test, I've got no problem. Someone wants to come onto our farm, test the water at the top of my farm and test at the bottom of my farm. And if for some reason, if I'm not complying, then I'm quite happy to do a management plan and see what I can come up with to solve the issues. So I think that's the angle that needs to go down.
Thank you.
The reason we lock our cars too, it's not because most people would never go into them, but there's one in a thousand, 100,000, and everybody locks their cars. So
that's a good example.
I'm just saying that we have to be careful that you don't regulate good practice anyway by encompassing us with a whole lot of expenses we don't need. And also, I thought the man who made the example of the cities saying that everyone is in this environment to keep it a green, clean image. And while we've been complimented on our streams, our waterway and our farm by fishermen throughout the world, that image can be tarnished by people that abuse the system. But our cities are also responsible in towns for ensuring that they their upkeep of our waterways are good too.
Okay.
Yes, I've got a couple of three things. So if I'm picking up correctly, you're saying let's understand the problem and then we'll bring in what we need to do to fix it, including a farm management plan or some other system. Is that correct? So in other words, let's understand what is actually happening around not only my farm, which leads me on to, are you involved in a catchment group?
No.
Would a catchment group help bring a group of farmers, in your view, to understanding what's happening in their total catchment? Because I understand your comments on a per farm basis, but a lot of these rules actually go across the whole region as they are written at the moment, and that's made up of many small catchments that are adding to one.
That's quite a good example, Lloyd, because they actually, the Environment South, and I'm not sure, it was Nathan Cruikshank, and he worked the stream that we've got a portion running through our place on. And that's the sandstone. And the sandstone had, over the years, been, it had degraded down and it had terrible results. And he got those people on that sandstone together and they applied fencing the sandstone off and riparian planting and different things like that. And there was one or two that probably contributed far more than anyone else. there was only 33 landholders, and they thought it was a good example of how to try and fix the stream catchment that you're talking about. We've ended up buying part of a farm and leasing the rest of it, and we end up now at the top end of where some of the problems were, and the original fencing off they've done off, and we it was more cattle than that problem, I hate to say it, but they had access to the stream, they were destroying the bank edge and doing that. With us now managing it, we can also see that when they put the banks in, it's too far, it's just a wee bit too far out from where the jolly edge are. The Hymax can't reach over to the thing because you're neither inside the bank or outside. The stock still have access in and under it. You do have to spray it off all the time. We're constantly sort of having to watch how we handle that. Cattle out of the stream, I think everybody would agree with that, and we're saying that would be the same for deer or, you know, anything that destroys the thing. So the river, and you might even have the stats on it, but that's an example of improving the waterway no end. Application of nitrogen and that wee flood bank you can see around in that photograph there, it actually works as a filtration trap, but also bulky drivers, despite telling them keep away and do everything else, you can't get anything like a wee bank, and they drive there and the jolly stuff hits the bank and doesn't go in the stream or anything anyway, despite the best of intention. That keeps them right out. It actually works really well. But not every farm has the position to be able to do that. This was done before we got there. It only stops a low fresh in the stream. It won't stop a big flood, and it doesn't affect someone else by being there. But not everyone would have that.
Okay, I'll just
but there on. Are examples of really good environmental practice at work.
Thank you. You made mention of the physiographic zones. Do you think they are correct on your property?
We've only been there for 9 years, so I'm not sure. I was very surprised that they were there at all. I wouldn't have thought. If I was picking a farm where a problem would be, it would be right on the river flats down lower. That's the softer soils that are more prone to runoff, but certainly not up there. That's, yeah, be the driest stuff on the farm.
Okay. And,
but also on that, what's that going to do to land prices and all that? If you bring in zoning, how is that going to affect?
Yeah, and after hearing today that the recording was done with a concentrated effort of effluent for so many years, just above a test bore, when good practice would have said, hey, if you spread out this here over a far bigger area, you wouldn't have had this. And there appears to be a very good example of how that by reducing that down, it's actually showing a trend down. Is your science good enough on this Matara soil? Or is it, I hope it's not solely based on this one example, because maybe you need to test elsewhere. And I think science is helping us in a lot of ways. We're seeing GPS allocation for things, and you're recording now what applications you're putting on nitrogen on areas. There's one or two who overdo nitrogen. It's not an economic reason for doing that. It's a good tool. It's very good to cropping guys that there's really good science on how much is required. There's no reward for putting on more than you require. So, you know, I think, you know, some of that there, I'd hate to see us get like England, where every bit you put on have got to be applied for and do that. Your regulations, I'd end up at the job inside of filling out forms all day. And I didn't really want to step back from farming a wee bit and do that.
You'd file them in the wrong bin.
Maybe.
Okay, we won't get into that discussion. can I just make, you made mention earlier on about the rotation of grass to grass, grass to cropping.
Yep.
Do you think the plan covers that well enough? We've had other submitters who have suggested that cropping for one or two years or crop types have been either favourable or not, depending on where they sit. But I pick up from your point that you want to be able to go grass to grass when you can, as you pass for improvement. Does the plan cover that well enough in your view?
Andrew,
I think the cropping, Andrew, yeah. I think the cropping that we're referring to in there more was through grain, through a grain crop rather than actually through a fodder winter crop.
Okay.
So it's just clarification that the difference between a what is a brassica crop to a, what is a like a feed crop.
Have you read the 42A report?
No, I haven't. No, I've seen it.
The officer has made a recommendation to us and to give us some clarity about...
Yeah, I read the highlighted points and it does have the breakdown of it.
Okay. Yep. So, and pick up your point around the cereal cropping, so it's summer cropping.
Yep.
You agree with that, how it sits in the plan?
I'd have to read it again to justify it.
Thank you.
Can I just add one wee thing on there? The new piece that Andrew and Catherine have brought on this hill brings us into... having to help have best management on the Hokanui Hills, and they're quite steep, and you know, you can sort of say, well, you can't work this, you can't do that, but I'm directly below Glen Island, and it would probably be, I don't know whether you guys know that, yeah. That, but when they first sprayed off the hill and did things there, I was thinking, whoa, you know, but look, full credit to them, those guys have managed that hill, they've fenced it off, they've got that hill looking really nice, and it's far better managed than that there, and I'd receive the water that was coming down off there. If there was a problem, I'd receive it. For some reason, it doesn't seem to be dirty water that comes down there. It's been pretty good, and I've been quite pleasantly surprised how good it is, and I would say that they've actually managed it really well. I can say there are other pieces of the Hokanui's where it's left, and there's gorse problems, there's endless sort of problems, and if you're looking at about an image of New Zealand and that the example there of the green hills and the stock on them are extremely good, whereas the image of gorse gradually taking over and thistles and every other weed you can imagine, it is not fitting with the image of what you want to portray. And actually what's happening is that it's not really worked. Some of it's worked, some of it's oversprayed and done, but what I'm saying is it's enhanced the position, not deteriorated it, and we'd be receiving it first, and it looks fine, and the runoff we've had has been excellent. You know, I can't complain.
Okay, any further questions?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
I just wanted to ask you about Rule 25, which is the cultivation rule, and you spoke a little bit about that. What slopes do you cultivate up to?
Well, to be fair, we use contractors for most of the cultivation, so it's...
But we still do
it. Oh, yeah, we still do it as well, but yeah, it's basically what they feel comfortable at, really.
Which would be what, do you think?
Oh, I haven't measured. I know there's all sorts of apps on the phone, but okay. I just think that there needs to be a... And also to limit it, that you've got in there that there was no mechanical cultivation above certain slopes. What classifies as that? Is that spray and pray?
We don't answer the questions we ask. You mentioned that you should be able to cultivate steeper slopes subject to good management practices.
Yep.
Or good practices. What sort of practices were you thinking of then?
Obviously staying away, doing the better parts of the paddock, staying away from the gullies and wet areas. There's some very good examples of guys out there that are doing that, and it's fantastic.
Okay.
But we can't redevelop what's already done. I think if we had a clean sheet and said we would redo a farm, and we came here when it was in its native form, I'm sure that a lot of Southland would have protected some of the areas that are necessary for good management that we're now planting trees and trying to do other things for. But the trick is to be able to earn enough money off a place to be able to afford to keep weeds and things that somebody brought here a long time ago that we're still suffering from. Horses, yep. Like another mortgage.
Now, Commissioner Rodway had three questions that he'd like me to ask you. I'll just put the question to you if you can just answer for the recording. His first question was, how would you determine whether or not a farm was contributing to the decline in water quality?
I believe through water testing. Yeah, top of your farm and the bottom of your farm.
Okay. And he said, in your submission you mentioned a letter from an angler, Barry Perkins, but the letter wasn't attached. He says, could you supply the letter?
Yep, can do.
Yep, we can give you the email address of some secretary's email.
I suppose you thought we'd already put it up. I thought it came through with this stuff.
No, I don't think it did. His third question was, if there was a regime where sheep grazing was allowed, but a long grass sward was maintained, so that some filtering of contaminants occurred, but weeds did not get away, would this be a good idea?
Um,
if you see the photograph, which I thought I put in there of some of the river edge, right down close to the river edge, there you go. Now that's had sheep in there for, I don't know however long this Waimea Valley's been developed. I don't know whether there's another one there of it, but the sheep have had access there. There you go there. There's a photo just from our bridge. Sheep have access right to the river. They don't pick edges to go. There's both sides they've got there. And up further you can see the edge probably where the photograph was taken. Sheep will still go down for a drink and come back. That river is actually in a rock bed, and it's actually really good. You can see there the grass in the inside edge of that bank is slightly longer because there's no mowing or treating. It's got a wee bit longer, but it's been eaten down. It's still got a filtering effect. If we let that grow up on some of those other examples I showed you, they get tall. You have a flood come down there, they rip the plant out, they tear the ground, they send down soil and ruin the banks. That's actually a very good way of just managing it. And sheep have had access there for 100 years.
So I'm not sure. So was the answer like, was it a yes or no or a maybe?
I think a no, because I think certain times of year you need to be able to control those weeds. And if you have it fenced off in the winter, well, that's when you can actually get them to eat those.
Okay. So what we're doing,
I think as long as they don't dig, devegetate, as long as there's no muddy runoff into the water, timing-wise.
It's sort of halfway said what he wants, really, when I think about what it is. So sounds like a politician's answer, doesn't it?
Just for the record.
Four-day shifts and fine weather, I don't believe they should be fenced off.
Okay, so just for the record, the submitters are talking to the photo that's called Grazed Stream Showing Flood Bank 2. So Morris will be able to go look at that. All right, thank you very much for coming in and presenting your material to us.
Thank you very much for listening to us and for all the submitters listening to everybody. Thank you for your time and effort in doing that.
Oh, it's extremely valuable for us, so thank you.
Thank you.